Many, many ways are proposed for dealing with climate change, scientifically, politically, economically, and there are certainly some combinations in there as well. You've heard about the cap and trade idea for capping carbon emissions and trading carbon credits, what detractors call that cap and tax. There are other ideas out there for financial mechanisms to bring carbon emissions down. The price and dividend idea would actually put some money in people's pockets. So let's find out whose pockets and how much money. Camila Thorndike is the executive director of the organization Oregon Climate, back in the studio with me. Welcome, Camila.
Thanks so much, Jeffrey.
So let's talk about the basic idea here. We have talked about things like cap and trade and carbon taxes and all that sort of thing. Let's begin with the basic mechanism here. What are you attempting to do, and who ends up as part of the transaction?
Sure. So what we as an organization are fighting for is what's called a price on carbon. And you can do that with two mechanisms, either a cap or a tax or a fee in the case that the government doesn't retain any of the monies brought in. That's called revenue neutral. So revenue neutral carbon pricing, again through a tax or a cap, internalizes the true cost of carbon into its price. So economists call that an externality, if something is not calculated into the profits of a product. And right now, the entire planet is being externalized from the price of fossil fuels that, when we burn them, are causing these massive disasters and daily tragedies that we're becoming familiar with. And so we're, as an organization, following the expert consensus that without a carbon price, we will not get to the clean energy transition and the zero use of carbon that science mandates. And so we're fighting for a viable political model here in Oregon.
Is the concept of externalities a tough one to get across? It seems like that, you know, it is so alien, it seems like, in our culture for the price of a product to actually consider the entire lifespan of that product and, for example, what the costs are on the back end to put that thing into a landfill when you're done using your TV set or whatever it is. But the idea of actually including that in prices seems like it's totally anathema, certainly to the people who produce them and want to keep their prices down.
It's true. I think of it as a very basic concept. However, it's just taking responsibility. We can use some fancy economic jargon if we want, but truly putting a price on carbon is saying we're not going to kick this can down the road anymore. We're going to take responsibility for the true benefits that we accrue from fossil fuels, which is a life of amazing convenience and power and comfort, and also for the costs. And so since those costs are mounting, since we are privileged with the knowledge of what is happening, we have the responsibility to adjust course. And we know that when we internalize the true cost, this monumental cost, trillions and trillions of dollars globally from using fossil fuels and the damages that are happening, we know that once that happens and the fossil fuel price is reflective of really whether it's good or bad for society, that alternative energies and the incentive to conserve will become the obvious choice for consumers, for investors, for governments, for cities. That will be, it's really creating more choices for people, not restricting.
Is this along the lines that some people have proposed where, for example, gasoline would never be allowed to go below $4 a gallon? Is that one of the possibilities here?
It is. So the way that carbon price works, there's two really important factors. How high does that price get? And that happens when you lower the cap such that the right to pollute with permits that major industries would purchase at an auction become scarcer and scarcer. So as that cap lowers, I think of it kind of as like a French press. You're pressing down the coffee grinds. They become more scarce. Every last drop is worth more and more. And so then that price signal kind of sent through the economy and all the products we use. Or the inverse, which does the same thing, which is a carbon tax or a carbon fee. And the government just puts that fee onto the price of a ton of carbon. And we start to see that, you know, a locally produced product that it results in less pollution is now more economical than something that was produced and flown across the world several times.
Since my product does not include those externalities, I am not paying that big fee or tax.
Exactly. And so the price is really important because economists say by the end of the century, the cost of carbon or the price of carbon needs to get up to $800 a ton. And really that is, we're starting at zero. So what we really need is some sort of mechanism that allows us as a society, as each of us as voters and consumers to support that. And that's why we're fighting for the revenue to be returned equally to everyone in Oregon and ultimately in the United States, so that that becomes something that we can all bear and also support as the price increases, because we'll be getting the direct benefit back for that transition.
Okay, let's talk about that in just a moment. Carbon dividends, we're talking about after carbon pricing. Camila Thorndike is the Executive Director of Oregon Climate here on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, you mentioned already that you're talking about making these programs revenue neutral, so that it would be essentially pass-through money. The government wouldn't keep that, but wouldn't there be some regulation cost involved that the government should hold on to?
Right. So for context, in our bills that we introduced in the 2015 session and had a couple hearings
on.
The
Oregon legislature. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, we introduced three bills, a cap and dividend and a fee and dividend and another in both chambers. And we had two hearings and hundreds of supporters came from hundreds of miles around Oregon to the Capitol twice. And what those bills suggested is that we set a price schedule that's tied to the best available science. How quickly do we need to reduce our use of fossil fuels? Well, you can just write that right into the bill. You just say the cap's going to go down to 80% below 1990 levels by 2050. Done. We know that that will generate in the state of Oregon over $5 billion, maybe $7 billion of revenue at the maximum price that consumers will support before we really start to decouple the economy from the use of carbon and those revenues again drop. So that means that even if we set aside a small fraction for the administration of that program, say, you know, $50 million, well, compared to $5, $7 billion, it's nothing. And we can use existing programs to do this, to enact this law. We can work with the Department of Revenue and the Department of Environmental Quality and just bring in the revenue from auction and send it right back to Oregonians in the form of a direct check. And you would be seeing upwards of $1,500, maybe someday $3,000 every year.
Really? So the individual Oregon, and does this go to all taxpayers? Does it go to all filers? I mean, how would you decide who gets the dividend checks?
Well, we're really interested in starting from as inclusive a baseline as possible and as simple a baseline. So whether you'd need to sort of opt out or there would be a very easy opt-in for the program. So ideas include all voters. Wouldn't that be interesting? You would quickly see total enfranchisement and participation in democracy. You also see ideas out there like back to taxpayers and taxpayer dependents. You wouldn't need to make enough income to file taxes, but that would be the mechanism by which you say, you know, sign up for the program.
How does this dovetail, for example, with the clean fuels program that was that caused such a stink between the two parties in the 2015 legislature, where the Democrats insisted upon finishing up reauthorizing the clean fuels program, which has not yet gone into effect? The Republicans said, you know what, we're not going to give you a transportation bill. If that stays on the books, there's no transportation bill. So politics aside, how does what you're talking about with carbon dividends and fees dovetail with things like the clean fuels program?
That's a great question. We believe in an economy-wide program. So a carbon price, if enacted well, would transition every sector of our economy and every use of fossil fuels at the same time. Clean fuels is a program that reduces the carbon content, not the volume, but the content of our liquid fuels in Oregon by 10% over 10 years. And we would like to see rather all carbon that's coming into the state, so electricity and liquid fuels, at a rate that the science really asks for.
Right. So just beyond just the liquid fuels that have been talked about, but everything.
Right.
Now, Camila Thorndike, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Executive Director at Oregon Climate. We're talking about carbon fees and dividends. The incentive here, certainly for the average person to get interested, is the dividend part of it. But if they've got checks rolling in because people are still pumping carbon out, wouldn't they then think, hey, this is great, let's just keep that carbon going so that I can keep the checks coming in? Because over time, the idea is to make sure that the price pressure forces the carbon to go away and therefore the dividends to go away too, right?
Great question. So you nailed the essence of any carbon pricing program, which is going to generate a lot of revenue. So our hypothesis is that no matter who is receiving that revenue, there's going to be a real struggle when we need to pass that point. They call it kind of the apex of the Laffer curve. We call it peak revenue. And that it will be much more difficult to overcome a vastly more resourced and powerful lobby that is receiving that revenue either for an agency budget or for a special interest group or for a very worthwhile program. We've seen when the government keeps revenues from sin taxes, from the cigarette taxes or timber payments for schools or any number of programs where we become dependent for the basic functions of our government or necessary services, there becomes a real struggle between the proponents of, say, reducing the the use of cigarettes. Well, that's going to have a big fiscal impact on our government. We should instead just deal with the price, which is capping or taxing carbon at the rate that we need, distribute the revenue so that, in essence, it breaks up the power of all that money. Yes, at some point, consumers are going to notice a gradual decrease in their individual checks, but those checks were meant to enable us a more easy transition away from fossil fuels, which is not going to be easy. We have, at this rate, nine times the rate of fossil fuel use globally is nine times greater than that of renewable energy. And so it's a glide path, and we need to make it easy on consumers, especially those who are less fortunate. The dividend makes that possible. Other programs it's harder to see that happening.
Would the dividend then arrive monthly or at least more frequently than yearly to allow them, for example, to pay for the additional price of gasoline, et cetera?
Right. So one myth to address right off the bat is that because this is a gradual cap lowering or price increasing, you'd really only be seeing pennies of a gasoline increase, at the pump every year. So much less price volatility than we've seen just in the last couple of years from gas changing dollars at a time. And so it truly is a gradual change, and the consumer won't be bearing most of that, or we don't know exactly how much the consumer will be bearing, but it's really kind of taking away from that unprecedented profit margin of the fossil fuel industry. And so it would be a gradual transition. Remind me of your original concern, however.
The original idea being that you'd have to, if you're trying to get people to adjust to higher prices for carbon-based fuels, for example, then the checks would need to arrive more frequently than once a year to be able to help them pay the higher prices.
Right. So the beauty of a cap is that there's no more pollution being emitted than is allowed under that cap. So we could return the checks at a more regular interval, say quarterly, and the consumers would not be generating more pollution than is allowed under that cap. It's a little different from a fee, and we don't need to get into the complexities of that at the moment. But there is a potential to do that and not enter the problem of what economists call churn, where there is a critique, oh, you're just going to, spend that money on a Hummer. It's truly that the choices, again, of consumer products and of ways that we use electricity or purchase goods, those will change with the price signal. So you will, in the interest of preserving most of your dividend, not want to buy that Hummer at the end of the day. You're going to be more interested in, well, how do I save money? And with the dividend, you can make more options available to you in your life that right now are really only available to those with resources. It's not cheap to be green, and we want to change that.
Given that the conversation has included the term Laffer curve, I mean, we're obviously talking in a zone that economists probably revel in. And when we're talking about the dividends, this is something that taxpayers or voters or somebody could also take some fun with. Now, you got to get this past the legislature, though. And what kind of responses did you get from the Oregon legislature this year in particular?
We were blown away. This was our first year really engaging with the legislature, and nobody expected carbon pricing to become such an important topic, given the clean fuels and all these other issues that were top of mind. And I think that there really has been so much momentum building over many years. I mean, since 2009, the state of Oregon has been trying to price carbon. And so we were able within a week to have 11 legislators in both chambers sign on as co-sponsors of this bill. And really in response to the demand created by ordinary people, all of us who just showed up, made phone calls, sent emails, and really flooded the building with the simple demand that we do what is required, not what we feel like, not what seems politically feasible at the moment, but what is required to really deal with climate change. And that is our great opportunity in this state, unlike any other.
So is this kind of system where there are some carbon fees in effect somewhere in North America? I don't know if is the dividend program in effect some places?
Most carbon pricing programs, and there are dozens around the world, have some form of a dividend. So that's an important thing to know, because I think often we see this as a binary, oh, there's either a dividend or there's not. No, most of them have some sort of direct benefit back to especially lower income consumers. The program that is closest to us that would be similar is in British Columbia. They have a revenue neutral carbon tax. What they've done is offset corporate and personal income taxes for the carbon monies coming in, and thus sort of kept an equivalent bottom line for the government. California has a cap and trade program. Cap and dividend is cap and trade. It just specifies where the revenue goes. And we believe that it's important to have universal benefit, that every Oregonian benefit from this, that it not be regressive because of the dividend, and that we not create new dependencies on fossil fuel revenues on the behalf of, you know, important industry groups or stakeholder or groups or organizations that, again, will become dependent for their budgets on that revenue.
So if in BC they're offsetting income taxes, does that mean it shows up as a credit? You don't get a check? The reason I ask this is because I imagine the check would be an incentive for more people to get on board. People like getting checks in the mail.
They do. We know that from Social Security or the Alaska Permanent Fund, any number of really popular programs. The British Columbia example is really interesting because when it was passed, I believe the electorate was very much aware of, oh, wow, here's this benefit coming back to me. I'm paying less taxes this year. But the problem is, and the reason that we need this check to go back regularly and be very obvious, is that the years pass and people forget. You just think, oh, maybe I made a mistake on my tax return, or, oh, yeah, I heard from, you know, my parents back when that taxes decreased, but why am I paying more for, you know, goods and services? So we want that reminder of benefit to be really present for the electorate, especially right before elections, when we want politicians to go back home and say, I'm going to get you a bigger dividend check, instead of dealing with rabid mobs angry at increased gas prices.
Is this still a fairly difficult concept to get across? I mean, there's a fair level of detail, as we're finding out in this discussion.
There is. At the same time that it's very, very simple. We need to take responsibility, number one. We know that carbon pricing is uniquely effective. In fact, perhaps maybe the only globally effective solution that we have at our disposal. Number two, we know that it'll generate a massive amount of money and that it's only fair and only politically salient in the long time for that money to go back to the electorate that will ultimately decide the fate of this policy.
All right. So cap and trade or cap and dividend, are there all the above? Is that what we're talking about?
So
here?
Cap and dividend is cap and trade. It just specifies that every person will benefit instead of special interest groups.
All right. Camila Thorndike is the executive director of Oregon Climate. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Such a pleasure. Thank you.